Okay, the second Aliyah is a packed Aliyah into four Psukim. There is quite a lot that emerges from these very brief words in Psukim. There's a lot included within them. And a part of it is something that's actually not in the Aliyah, but it's how the Aliyah is described in Chazal, that itself gets its own load of attention. A lot to try to figure out just about the name of this Aliyah. Because what happens in this second Aliyah of Kisavo is a declaration that is recited when the maestros are attended to. And that declaration is not given this name in the Psukim, but in Chazal, a Mishnah in Sota, in the seventh parak, this is referred to as Vidoy Masa. And that's the language that gets a lot of attention, because we are in Vidui season right now. We are in the season of Tshuva in Elul, approaching Rosh Hashanah. We're halfway there. And the whole notion of Vidui we associate with confession, with saying what you did wrong. But if you read through the Psukim, as we will, and you'll see that the phrases that are going to come up are not so confessional as far as they sound. That they sound actually like you're quite happy with yourself. You say things like, Atzisi kechol asher tzivitani, v'lovarti mitzvazecha v'lo shachati, I've done everything that I've been commanded, I listened to you completely, I didn't leave out anything. So we'll have to figure out all the different levels of what those words can mean. But how is that a vidui? How is that a confession? It doesn't seem appropriate at all. So some understand that vidui doesn't necessarily translate into confession. It translates into hodah. Hodah, which shares a root with confession because it means to acknowledge, but hodah is also what we use for thanking. Todah, Hakar Sato, is also about acknowledging that you have benefited. So just like a confession is to acknowledge something, so you are moda to somebody else, and there's a lot behind that relationship about the connection between moda in the sense of thanking someone and moda in the sense of admitting and acknowledging. But perhaps that's what the message here is. It's all the reference of gratitude. It's not necessarily meant to imply that you are confessing sins. Others have many different interpretations. So the Sfarno suggests that there is a confession here of the sort, because the focus on the Levian as the ones who are representing us is a result of the fact that we sinned at the Chet Egel, and the Bechor is no longer the one to represent. And therefore, there is an acknowledgement with some kind of guilt here. Maybe there is a vidui more in the traditional sense. Others point to other problems. So, for example, in the Minchas Chinuch, so he writes, this is in Tafresh Zion, that the idea is that you're only attending to these maestros, and we'll discuss the details of that in a minute, you're only attending to these maestros at the latest possible time. Just we know the background of maestros, so we have a 7-year cycle which ends in Shemitah, and before that we have two sets of three. So we have a 3-year cycle and a 3-year cycle, and then every 7th year is Shemitah. So every year we have the maestro for the Levian, and then we have a second maestro. So the second maestro for 1, 2, and 4, and 5 in the cycle, that is the Maaser Sheni, that is the Maaser that you bring to Yerushalayim and you consume it there. And the third year, year 3 and year 6 of the cycle, that is the Maaser Ani. So here we're talking about when this is all done. This is at the end of the 3-year cycle. So the Minchas Chinuch suggests this is the deadline. It means that you didn't take care of everything in any earlier time. So there's a confession in that sense. There's a vidui that, okay, that here is the very last moment where I'm addressing all of these maestros. There are others who find other meanings in these psukim. So, for example, the Netziv in his commentary, so he says, when the pasuk says later, lo avarti mitzvosecha v'lo shachakti, so there's two phrases there, lo avarti mitzvosecha. So, in general, I didn't violate averos. But there are some that it's impossible not to violate. So, for example, Lashon Hara, Chofetz Chaim says you should always say it's not impossible to avoid Lashon Hara, but there is a statement in Chazal that at least as far as Avak Lashon Hara, the Gemara says in Baba Basra, V'kulan Bavak Lashon Hara, that all of us are guilty of at least some form of Lashon Hara. So it's impossible for us to say on a total level, but at least the lo shachati, the ones that I wasn't so successful with, at least I didn't forget about. So at least I acknowledge that, and he sees a vidoy of that sense in that phrase. But that's clearly a more subtle inner meaning. In the Sefer Parish Yosef HaKadosh, the reference of Sefer before, so he quotes from the Zitach of the Rebbe that the idea of this being a vidoy, even when you're praising yourself, is that that's the point, that you're praising yourself for your gaiva, or that you are regretting your gaiva. That the fact that you think, lo avarti mitzvotecha v'lo shachati, the fact that you think that you're so perfect that you didn't do anything wrong, that's where there is something that you have to be misvada about. And he also quotes a similar idea from the Satmar Rav, that the notion is that I remember too much all the good things I do. So you're being misvada, essentially, on the gaiva that is suggested by some of these phrases, somewhat of a paradoxical idea. In the Asayim L'Torah, the Luskarav, he notes the idea, I think Baal Shem Tov had said, that when the Pasuk says, the Kodesh Baruch Hu is Zocher Kol HaNishkachos, that he remembers that which is forgotten, the idea is that when we're too proud of ourselves, we remember too much about what we did right, so that the Kodesh Baruch Hu Kaviyachol forgets, doesn't pay attention to as much. But that which we are not so boastful about, which we forget, so that the Kodesh Baruch Hu, so to speak, remembers, that he is Zocher Kohan Nishkachos. But maybe there's an additional idea that could be represented by calling this Vidoy that's very important for our whole season here. And the notion of understanding what Vidoy is and its role in the Tshuva process, there is a lot of discussion about this because the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva, so when the Rambam begins Hilchos Tshuva, he says that there is a mitzvah when one wants to do tshuva that he should be mitzvah, that he should engage in vidui. And the language sounds a little bit like it's not that there's a mitzvah of tshuva, but there's a mitzvah of vidui. And that provokes a lot of discussion. The Chassidus talks about this over there and understands the Rambam to be saying there's no mitzvah of tshuva. And many find that very difficult for a lot of reasons. First of all, we'll read soon Parshas Nitzavim, and Parshas Nitzavim, it certainly sounds like there's a reference to a mitzvah of tshuva. That's something we'll talk about separately. But also the idea that the Rambam of all people doesn't think tshuva is a mitzvah. The Rambam is the one who gave us Hilchos Tshuva. In the Shulchan Aruch, we don't have a special section of Hilchos Tshuva. In the Rambam, we have 10 prakim of Hilchos Tshuva. It's hard to believe that he doesn't think tshuva is a mitzvah. So Rav Soloveitchik explained that the idea is that tshuva for sure is a mitzvah. There's no question tshuva is a mitzvah. But it is a mitzvah that is completely internal. That the mitzvah addresses our internal state. It's about who we are as people, essentially. It's on one level, basically, not an action. It's a reality of our character. So if we're going to formulate a mitzvah has to have an action. And therefore, we need something that you can do that is associated with tshuva. And to use the Brisker language, it's a distinction between a maisa and a kiyum. There's an action of the mitzvah, and there is where the mitzvah is fulfilled. So the mitzvah is accomplished through the internal state, but there has to be something that can be an action that will bring that about. This is comparable, perhaps, to the more well-known example of this idea when we're coming up to Yontif. So in Yontif, we have an obligation of Simcha, and that translates into we should, for example, have good meals. We should have Basar V'Yayin on Yontif. So the idea of calling that the mitzvah of Simcha's Yontif, really, it's the Maisa HaMitzvah, it's the action that we do in order to bring about the emotional state of simcha. So the real kiyum ha-mitzvah is v'samachta b'chagecha. But the emotion of simcha is not something we can just turn on and turn off. So therefore, we have to do something in order to bring that state about. And that action is eating meat, drinking wine, whatever it's going to do, whatever it's going to be, in order to give us that emotional state. So similarly, the Rav said, when it comes to tshuva, so tshuva is not an action you can do. We need an action to point to call that a mitzvah. So vidui is the action that brings about tshuva. When we confess our averos, when we acknowledge what we've done wrong, so that brings it to our realization, and we'll recognize that we have to change, we have to act differently, and the result will be tshuva. So vidui essentially is the maisa ha-mitzvah in order to bring about the kiyum of tshuva. Earlier in the week, Menachem Kravitz suggested a beautiful idea, some extra synergy here. This is already relevant to us, not just for the parsha, but because of the time of year. But Menachem also suggested an interesting comparison to the sugya that we were holding in, that the relationship between the obligation of bedika as chametz and of bittul chametz. So we noted that the Ran said that min haTorah could be either, and we referred to Rav Kook's discussion about why is it that if they could be either one, so why do we focus on bedika as the topic of the Mishnah? So he gave his explanation as to why that's the preferable method, why that's the emphasized method. But it's also particularly noteworthy that maybe there's a connection between the two. And as Menachem put it, that maybe the bittul is mental and the bedika is the action that shows that we mean it, which was similar to how Rav Kook address the relationship between the two. And he made the comparison that seems to parallel what you have with vidui and tshuva, that tshuva is essentially a mental state, a internal reality, so the vidui is what shows that it's real. So here the Rav is saying, maybe a little differently, the vidui is the kli for it. The vidui is what brings it about. So if that's the case, so normally when we talk about vidui, we mean to confess. We mean to say, okay, I've done terrible things, and some not so terrible, some really bad, whatever, a whole range of things, and hopefully it's going to inspire me to change my behavior. So most of the time when we talk about vidui and we talk about tshuva, that's what we're referring to. But we also have to recognize that that's just not the only yetzahara we have to deal with. It's not only the sense of complacency and the sense that I'm perfect that needs to be addressed by vidui. Yes, that's the big one. And that's the feeling that there isn't anything that needs to change. So yes, we need to be misada in order to shake that up. But there's another yetzahar. There's another issue that gets in the way of tshuva. Sometimes people aren't ready to do tshuva because they feel, yes, I actually am very aware of all of what I've done wrong. I know about all of my mistakes, but I don't think I'm capable of doing anything better. I don't think that growth is possible for me. I'm stuck here. So therefore, we're forced to acknowledge that it's not always true, that sometimes we say, sometimes we are able to do everything perfectly, and we are able to accomplish everything that is asked of us, and if that's the case, so then we are in a position to do tshuva. We are in a position to grow and to be more complete in our accomplishments. So the vidui, we shouldn't, for these purposes, necessarily translate it only as saying I'm terrible, saying I've messed up, but translate it more halachically as a tool towards tshuva, as a statement that will provoke a action of growth. And most of the time, that speech is I've messed up, but sometimes that speech is, I've done everything right, and if I've done everything right today, I can do everything right all the time. I can do everything right more often, and maybe that's what the vidui here connotes. There are other interpretations as well. So, for example, Nassim Gestetner in the Sefer Laharus Nassim and the Sefer An Chomish, so he suggests that essentially it's a checklist, that you're going over everything that you've done, and you're seeing that Have I really lived up to it or not? Or am I missing anything? And through this experience of saying, okay, I'm perfect with this, I'm good with this, I'm good with that. So if there's something missing, then you'll realize that you're misrepresenting yourself and you'll be forced to correct it. And therefore, it's a process of tshuva. There's a similar comment in the Zayin L'Torah where he notes that when we talk about the negative kinds of vidui, when you're saying about everything I've done wrong, so okay, sometimes we say it in a way that seems a little bit of an exaggeration. We're not as bad as we make it sound sometimes as far as what we include in the vidui. But here in a positive declaration, if we're going to exaggerate positive accomplishments, so that's going to make things awkward. That's going to, if we overinflate our resume, so we're going to feel a greater sense of responsibility to make sure that things are lined up and that our resume is accurate, because that could really get us in trouble to claim things that we are taking pride in when they're not really true. So maybe it's a part of the process of tshuva in that sense. So these are a number of interpretations as far as why Chazal call this vidoy, and we'll see more as we look at the words in the psukim, which we haven't even started yet. So you see how much there is in the four psukim. All of that wasn't even in the psukim. Okay, so what's going on here? So we're dealing with the maitre. So first pasuk tells us, Yitzchak Halel Aser is Kol Maaseh Tzvoasva, V'Shana Hashlish Shnas Hamaseh Nasasa La'Levi La'Ger La'Yisom La'Amana. So you, at the end of the third year, you've dealt with all the maitres, the maitre levi, the maitre sheni, and the maitre aniyim. So you do all of what you need to do with it. You give it to the levi, you give it to the yachim of the amana, and you eat that which you're supposed to eat. So all of that you are taken care of at that time. When exactly is this? This kisachala, when exactly does this happen? So here, this is a little bit of a question. So it takes place sometime Pesach related, Machlokas, whether it was Erev Pesach or Erev Yom Achron Shal Pesach, but sometime around then. And the idea is that the produce is still in the field sometimes up until Hanukkah. So you have from after Hanukkah to do this. So if you're assuming that you're going to do this in the Beis HaMikdash, which is also Machlokas, we'll see, we'll get to that also. So then when are you in the Beit HaMikdash? So you're in the Beit HaMikdash during the Regalim. So the next Regal after Hanukkah is Pesach, so this is happening Pesach time. Okay, so here we call it, this is happening in the third year. Rashi tells us that this is the year when we don't have Maaser Sheni. Rashi says, Shana She'ein Noeg Bo Ela Maaser Echa. So why does it have to emphasize to us that there's no Maaser Sheni? So here, Rav Moshe Feinstein has a comment that the point is to see how you relate to the mitzvah, and that he thought this also connects to the whole vidui theme, that when you do a mitzvah, is it only because you're obligated to do it, or is it because you actually appreciate the experience? So the test of that is, what happens when you don't have to do it? So do you feel that you miss it, or do you feel like I'm happy, I'm off the hook? So he suggests that that's a part of the vidui process, to kind of test, how do you feel about not having that spiritual experience, which I think is something we connect to this year especially. So hopefully we're starting to come back, depending a little bit where you live and what's going on in your area. But maybe you've come back a little more already, maybe not so close to it, but we're coming back to the shuls, and we're coming back to the shul experience slowly. And certainly for some period of time, we were disconnected completely from the shul experience. Okay, so there's a situation of pikuach nefesh, and so it's a situation of pikuach nefesh, you have to do what you have to do, but the question is, how do you feel about it? Do you feel like you missed it, or do you feel like there's something lacking? So perhaps that's a little bit what's included in this point. Okay, so why is it called this the Shnas HaMaaser then, if every year is a Shnas HaMaaser? So Rashi was addressing that, and the Shana that doesn't have the Maaser Sheni. Hirsch writes in his commentary that this is, we're dressing all the maestros together, so this is the year, every third year is when you have the end of the three-year cycle, so therefore it's the ability to refer to everything at once, so we call it the year of maestro. And it says, suggests that this is the maestro that really counts, the maestro ani, this is where you really see the covet of the Kaddish Baruch Hu, this is because maestro for the Levium, okay, so that feels like salary. Okay, so we know that they don't have their own land, so we have to pay them, And Meister Sheni is for the Bailin, so it doesn't necessarily feel like it's about anyone else. But Meister Ani, so that's where you really see the Kvod Shemayim. And the Hafla, that's an additional interpretation here, that it's called Shnasa Meister because the other Meisters take care of in one shot the Meister for the Aniyim, so they could be coming all year long, and you're providing it throughout, so therefore the whole year is Shnasa Meister. Okay, so then the Pasuk which ends off, the Achlu v'sharecha v'saveihu, so in this Tefray there's a statement here that Ein Motzin Peiros min ha'aretz l'chutz la'aretz, that we don't take the fruit, we don't take the produce to chutz la'aretz. The Vilna Gaon has a different gear, so where instead of Peiros, it says Aniyim. And the idea being that you don't say to the Aniyim, go to chutz la'aretz to have them take care of you, take care of them here. And it could also be a reference as far as where the Aniyim are. There is a whole discussion of Sefer of Mordechai Ilan, called Mikdash Mordechai, the Sefer and Chumash, that he notes there is a discussion when it comes to Tzaka, so we have priorities, and we assume Aniya Ircha Kogan, that you have to prioritize the Aniyim of your locale and of your environment, is not necessarily a geographical location, but of your environment. And somewhere on the list is also a priority for Aniya Eretz Yisrael. It's a big discussion of what happens in the conflict between the two, Aniya Eretz Yisrael and Aniya Ircha. But there's a whole discussion within Eretz Yisrael, is Yerushalayim prioritized at all? So the Chen Sofer and the Tarasimim thought that Yerushalayim had a priority even within Eretz Yisrael. Others very much disagreed with that. Rav Osner has a tshuva about it, but maybe that's what this reference here is, also to the priority perhaps given to the Aniyim of the Makom Kodesh, of the Sha'arim. Okay, so in any event, the next pasuk tells us, the Amarta l'fnei Hashem Elokecha, the Arti HaKodesh min Habayis, the Gamis Hativ l'Alevi, l'Bilager, l'Yasom v'Almana, k'chol mitzvotcha, asher tzivisani, lo avayit mitzvotcha, v'lo shachafti. So here's where the Vidui really seems to take this boastful tone, where you talk about how perfect you are, you talk about everything that you did right. So first of all, the Amarta l'fnei Hashem Elokecha, so, what does it mean, L'fnei Hashem Elokecha? So, the Rambam says you could do this outside of the Beis HaMikdash also. But the Raivid disagrees, and the Raivid says it just has to be in the Beis HaMikdash, and that's what we connected to what we said before about this happening Pesach time, because it has to be around the Regel, has to be when you, that's when you're going to be in the context of the Beis HaMikdash. And Tosfos also says, like the Raivid, that it has to be Tosfos and Sota, that it has to be B'fnei HaZara. So we go on to say about, you make this declaration, and you say that, okay, so I got everything out of the house, and I hear just a little bit of minor synergy, but the idea of B'arti HaKodesh Min HaBayis, so that word probably sounds a little familiar to us, and B'ur, and what exactly the meaning of B'ur is, and we're going to get into greater length about Bir Chametz and what exactly constitutes Bir Chametz and whether Bittul satisfies the definition of Bir. So here, what does Bir mean? So it means we take it all out of the house and we try to assign it to its proper purposes, and that which doesn't make it there has to be destroyed. It's a Bir in that sense. So in any event, okay, so we have this process of taking it out. And we make these declarations of, I did everything that you commanded me to do. So what does it mean, l'avarti mitzvotecha? So Rashi says, you know, in terms of focusing on a detail of what maybe I would have done wrong, says, l'avarti mimin al she'ein mino. So I didn't take from one min on another min. So it's interesting to focus on that. I guess it makes sense in the context of Maitras, but does it have maybe some kind of broader symbolism? Rav Yosef Tzvi Dushinsky, in his sefer, he suggests in the Taurus Ma'aritz that talking about mitzvahs as a whole, we say that, lo avarti mitzvotecha, that sometimes people think that It's all just about the math. And if I do enough mitzvot, so I have room for some averos too. So I can allow myself some averos because of all the mitzvot I do. So that's not what we're looking for. We're looking for a balanced personality who does mitzvot and also avoids averos and doesn't try to pay for one with another. So that attitude, lo'avarti mitzvot safa. I didn't do averos that I thought I was justified in because of the mitzvot that I did. And that also has particular relevance to the tkufa as we approach Rosh Hashanah. So it's going to be the Aseres Yemei Tshuva. And there's a question the Balei Mussar asks, that why is it that we have the whole notion of Aseres Yemei Tshuva? And the idea is that on Rosh Hashanah we're judged, and if we're tzaddikim we're judged one way, if we're Rishayim we're judged another way, and it's the Bein Adin, we're in the middle, it's 50-50. So they have Aseres Yemei Tshuva to tilt the balance. So some of the Balei Mussar asks, Yitzchok Lazer, the prominent Talmud of Yisrael Kulanter, has an important essay about this. Why do we have a concept of a Aseres Yemei Tshuva? In order to tilt the balance, we shouldn't be 50-50. It's easier to do mitzvahs than to do tshuva. Tshuva is very hard, so why don't we just have a Aseres Yemei Mitzvah? Let's have some additional mitzvahs, and that will push us over 50-50. Why is it that we have a Aseres Yemei Tshuva? So there are many approaches one could take to that, but as some point out, that if one fails to do tshuva at the time when HaKadosh Baruch Hu was closed, Tirshu Hashem b'Yimatzo, so then that itself is an avera that is overwhelming and that is very hard to overcome. But it also reflects the fact that it's not just about trying to score enough points to offset your losses, but it's about the complete Oved Hashem, who is both observant of mitzvot and not going to violate averos, and if he does, he's going to do tshuva on those averos, and that perhaps is symbolized here, this idea of lo avarti mitzvotecha. Okay, so then to go on to say that I didn't forget anything, lo shachachti, so what does it mean lo shachachti? So here things get very complex and very mysterious, because almost as much as the whole vidui discussion is understanding Chazal on this phrase. Because what does it say? I didn't forget. So what does it mean, I didn't forget? So what does Rashi say over here? I didn't forget to make a bracha on Hafrashas Maitris. So what's the problem with that? What's the problem with interpreting the pasuk that way? Yeah, Zach?
Bracha is probably Drabana.
Yeah, I'd say more than probably, right? Isn't that how we're trained, that Bracha is a mitzvah, so Drabana, and that's what we thought. So how could we say here that this Bracha is the meaning of the Pasuk? I didn't forget to make the Bracha. That couldn't be what the Pasuk is getting at. That's not a part of the Chiyuv. So the problem is Rashi is not making this up. This is a Mishnah in Maitre Sheni, which also says like this, and it's difficult, as everyone asks that Baruch Hu Sarag Rabbanan. So some suggest, as Maral in the Gorarie commentary, Maral in his Gorarie commentary on Rashi, where he says that maybe it doesn't mean the bracha literally, but it means that we should say some words of Shavach that connect to this, and that's the idea that's being referred to here. It gets harder and harder when you get deeper into the sources, because, so first of all, Rashi says based on Mishnah, but also the Gemara, Mitzachas Brachos, and Mem and Beit has this idea also, and Rashi over there, just to make sure you have no wiggle room, Rashi over there explains that what does it mean. It says, Asher Kishanim Zosa V'Sivanu L'Hafri, there's the exact language there. It doesn't leave you much room to interpret it in other ways. So there is a lot of discussion about this, as you can imagine. So there are some who say, the Maharal can suggest, that maybe this one bracha is daraita, that maybe just like when it comes to Brachas HaTorah, there's a machlokas rishonim about whether it's daraita. Now we know that benching is the one bracha normally that's considered to be daraita. And Brachas HaTorah is a machlokas, Rambam and Ramban and others, whether that's the mitzvah HaTorah. So maybe this is an indication that this one is also the bracha connected to HaFreshas from Mitzvah Maitris is an exception, that's a commandment in HaTorah. There's a problem, it's very hard to work out, because the truth is that's against the Beferish Gemara also in Brachos, that earlier in Brachos in the second parak. So the Gemara talks about whether you can be mafresh maestros if you're not dressed properly, if not dressed at all. And the Gemara talks about comparing that to Kriya Shema. So the Gemara says explicitly that, well, maestros, the issue is only going to be the bracha. And the bracha is not ma'akev. And the Gemara says the Feirush there is talking about a precious maestros, that the bracha is drabanan. So it's not just a general attitude that we have by Berachos HaMitzvot. It seems to explicitly be the case about the hafrasha, the bracha connected to the hafrasha of Maitra. So this is very difficult. To see Pesach Frank in the comments that were collected in the Sefer Hartzvi Al HaTorah, it says this Rashi is based on Yerushalmi, where it sounds like Berachos HaMitzvot in general are Min HaTorah, would be against the Bavli, but that the Yerushalmi that sounds like that, that maybe there is a connection between Berachos HaTorah and Berachos HaMitzvot, and the same possibility that Berachos HaTorah is Min HaTorah, so maybe Berachos HaMitzvot is also Min HaTorah. Maybe that's what Rashi is going like. The Sheni Shmuel, who was Sach Shavar Evi, who was the son of the Avnei Nezer, and he quotes from his father many times in the Sefer. So the Avnei Nezer, we have the wonderful Tshuvas for him and others for him, but we don't have the Sefer on Chumash, but his son quotes him a lot in the Sefer on Chumash, the Sheni Shmuel. So we'll come back to the Shem Mishmuel's comments of the Tov Aliyah, but just regarding this, the Shem Mishmuel quotes the Avnei Nezer as saying that this is not actually a reference to the Bracha Nefrasha specifically, against the Rashi and Brachos, but maybe here, could work with the Rashi and Chumash though, that it's not about the Birchas HaMitzvah, but he says it's about the Shechionim. And the idea that the enthusiasm one should feel for a mitzvah that's expressed by Shechionu, that is a crucial theme here, and that's what the Torah is conveying to us. And with that, he quotes his father as saying that Shechionu is daraisa, that the obligation of saying a Shechionu and a mitzvah and feeling that enthusiasm, that is actually daraisa itself. So that's a fascinating idea. Okay, so there's a lot that revolves around this, and this is a little bit of synergy because the whole question, a little bit of synergy in advance, because the whole question of Birchas HaMitzvot and what exactly is the nature of our obligation of Birchas HaMitzvot is a sugya in the first parak of Pesachim, not so far off on Daf Zayin. So God willing, we will have the opportunity in the not-so-distant future to spend a lot more time on the concept of Birchas HaMitzvot and its obligation. So that's something which is alluded to here in some great detail. And there are other interpretations also. Yaakov Kamenetsky has a few comments about this in his Sefer Emes Yaakov, and he suggests that the whole relationship of Lovartz and Sosecha Velo Shachachti, that when it comes to Hafrasha, so there are different components, that there is the act of separating the Meiser and making your food edible and taking away the status of Tavol, and actually also the Nesina, the obligation to give it to who is supposed to receive it. So we're emphasizing that we're not just worried about making our food mutter, we're not just worried about that component of it, but we also appreciate the other part of the mitzvah, that we are actually going to give it, that we're actually going to fulfill that. Okay, so again, a lot more to say about the notion of Berachos HaMitzvot and Torah Midrabanan, so that's where we're fortunate as a sugya in the near future of Sachem. So let's look at the next pasuk. So, Lo achalti ve'oni mimenu, v'lo bi'arti mimenu b'tamei, v'lo nesati mimenu l'meit, shamati v'kala shem alokai, asisi k'chala sheret v'isani. So here again, so we find what seems to be some bragging, so we're very happy about everything that we did right, about everything that we did perfectly. So first of all, what are we talking about here? When we say that all these things, so what does all that mean? So are these things that you're not allowed to do? Yeah, that's what it sounds like. But on what level? So these are Isurim that are being taught here. I didn't do this, I didn't do that. So if you look in the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvos and Shorash Ches, so the Machlokas, the Rambam, the Ramban, are these Lavin that are being listed here? So there's a Chiyuv Malchus, if one were to do these actions, whatever they are, we'll have to see in a second. Or is it maybe a Lav HaBa Michal Asay, that it's an implicit Lav, and not necessarily subject to Malchus, but there's some level of prohibition being described here. So what are we talking about? Lo achalti v'oni. Okay, so I didn't eat it. V'oni, what is v'oni? So, in a state of aninus. That I know that there is a concept of aninus when somebody is, somebody, Rahman al-Salam, loses a relative, so between that time and the kvura, so there is a ptur from mitzvos. That's a din derabanan. The whole practice of avelus, we assume la halacha that avelus and aninus is a din derabanan. But there's a concept of aninus min ha-Torah, that specifically in the realm of kudshin, that on the yom yisu kvura, it's a different definition than aninus derabanan. But on that day, the yom hamisa, so there is a exclusion from kudshin, an exclusion from mitzvot that are similar to that. So to eat the ma'aser sheni, but aninus is prohibited. So that's what we're saying. Well, halti v'ani mimenu, lo ba'arti mimenu b'tameh, and I did not consume it b'tuma. So what do we mean by that? So that's also aser. So one's not allowed to eat ma'aser sheni b'tuma. B'tuma could refer either to the person doing the eating or that which is being eaten. But in both cases, the prohibition of eating ma'aser sheni b'tuma. But Chiddush here, more than that, that we know already, but here is telling us that I didn't even consume it, the tuma, that even if I didn't eat it, let's say I'm burning it, but I'm not allowed to get hana from the burning. I can't use that, let's say, for some positive purpose for myself. So that's the difference between truma tmeya and ma'aser sheni that's tamei. When it comes to truma, you don't have that issue. When it comes to ma'aser sheni, so we're not allowed to even be nana from the burning. So that's what we're referring to. What does it mean, v'lo nasati mena l'meis? So here, so Rashi, it's interesting. Rashi says, la'aslo, aron v'sachris, that I didn't make a shroud for a mace out of, I didn't spin it into a cloth, into fiber and into a garment and use it to create a shroud for the deceased. So that, as Ramban points out, that it's not only for a deceased person that you can't make it, you couldn't make it for clothes for a living person also. So why is the focus on mace, a shroud for a mace, even clothes for somebody who's alive, you also can't use this for that purpose. So the Rambam, the way the Rambam understands it in Hilchos Ma'aser Sheni, is that you're only allowed to use Ma'aser Sheni for things that directly sustain the human body, for eating and drinking and sicha, and anointing, and anything else is called lemeis, even if it's for a living person, but it's not something that sustains their life, so that's called lemeis. Okay, so what about the tfos at the end? So Shamaiti b'kol Hashem Elokai, Asisi kechol asher tzvisoni. So here Rashi has samachti v'simachti bo. So this mitzvah of simcha, this recognition that there is an emotional obligation, is a theme throughout the parsha. The parsha gets very intense soon after this, and very hard to contemplate a lot of what's in the parsha. But you have a theme, perhaps paradoxically, of simcha throughout, simcha in the beginning, and simcha in the middle, simcha that's good, and simcha that we are held accountable for not having in the context of the Tofacha. So this mandate of connecting emotionally to all the positives of the Torah and to all the blessings is one that is a theme throughout the Parsha. Here Rashi understands that that's what we're talking about. So we get to the last Pasuk. So the last Pasuk is also intense like all of these psukim that we've seen. And there's a lot to say about that also. So we end off the Aliyah, and we say Hashkifa. So what do we mean by Hashkifa? Hashkifa b'mon kodshecha b'na Hashemayim. So God should look at us, should survey us from His holy place. U'varech et amcha et Yisrael, v'eis ha'adama asher nasata lanu, kasher nishbata l'abuseinu, eretz zavat chalav u'dvash. So you should look from your holy place, look from your exalted place, and you should bless us. It's not exactly what was promised to the Avos. So here is an interesting combination of ideas, but okay, that so Rashi explains that you promised to the Avos what they wanted to give to us, and you fulfilled it, and what is it? It's Eretz Zavat Chalav U'Dvash. Rashi tells us we shouldn't read that was part of the Shavua L'Avoseinu. but that's what was given to us. But here, this idea of Hashkifa, so Hashkifa, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is looking at us. So normally we have this idea that Kol Hashkafa L'ra, that Hashkafa, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is surveying us, is there. It's something that we're in trouble, that he's looking at us, and that the usage often conveys that there is something to worry about. But here, it's different. Here, Chazal tell us that because of the tzedakah that's involved, because we're talking about Maiserani and the like, so that changes the rogez to rachamim. That changes the anger that could accompany God surveying us to rachmanus. So what exactly does that mean? So there are a number of interpretations here as well. Rav Schwab in his sefer suggests that the message is that normally if you're bragging, so that is dangerous because that invites refutation, that invites judgment, and to be bragging in front of the Ribbono Shel Olam is going to cast a negative view upon us, that maybe we're not really living up to what we're saying. So in general, that's the case. But here we're saying that because we're involved in tzedakah, that should help protect us, and that should make it into a positive judgment. And the Tziv comments about this also, and he notes that the idea is that you might also look bad because we've been given so much, and the judgment might come out with the assessment that we're not deserving of it. And therefore, we ask that the tzedakah that's involved should speak well for us, and that what we are given, indeed, we direct it towards charitable purposes, we use it properly, and therefore, yes, we are deserving in that sense of what we have. And of course, this is very much relevant to the whole theme of our tefillos on Rosh Hashanah, and we ask for a good year, we ask for a year when we're given resources to accomplish, and we make that point by trying to convey that we've used it well, that all the resources, whether it's the resources of our time, the resources of our money, the resources of our family, of all the bracha that we have, we use them properly, we use them to positive ends, and thus we are hoping that we'll be zochet to have more. We're hoping that that will be the impact of all of this expression. So there is a interesting drasha that the Shem Yishmuel has, the Sachshav Rebbe, who we mentioned a few minutes ago. So he, you know, the Sifrei HaChassidus, Al HaTorah, so you have to, they're arranged differently than other Mefarshim HaNechomish. In Mefarshim HaNechomish, you go from the beginning of the parasha to the end. But in the Sfarim of Chassidus Rebbe's, so they're publishing the drushes that they gave every year. So they don't really go in any order. You just have to go from the beginning to end, and themes come back up again. And this is the case. So in the Shem Yishmuel, in another comment, so he gets into really the totality of this aliyah, and he talks essentially about all of the questions that we've talked about till now. So he considers them all at once. And he, for example, the question that we started with, he says the whole idea of vidui, so why is this aliyah referred to as vidui? Like we said, doesn't seem like it really matches the content. Doesn't seem like you're really confessing anything. And he makes reference to the Svarno that we said before, that it's about losing the status of the Bechor. It doesn't sound like that's what we're talking about. It sounds like we're referencing specifically something in the context of Maestris, and that that is prompting us to have a vidui here. So here he notes a very important idea, which is a reference to the previous pasuk. And he quotes the Rambam and his Shuvas and others making this point. So that sounds like a double language. I listened to everything God said, and I followed all of his mitzvot. It sounds redundant. Why is it that we need to say both? So he emphasizes here a major theme that we have, B'chol Torah Kula, that our job is not only to follow the letters of the words, not only to follow the stated instructions, but it's our job to work hard to understand the Kavanos HaTorah, to try to understand what is the message the Torah is conveying. Now, this is a theme of Asher Weishlita talks about a lot in his shiurim, his essays in the Sefer HaChumash, where he focuses on that topic specifically, on the idea of Kavanas Atara, but it's an idea that we find throughout, that we're obligated not only to follow the letter of the law, but also to try to understand what its message is. So that's, for example, the Ramban spells this out on the Pasuk of Yastisa Yashiv HaTov, and the Pasuk of Kedoshim Tiyu, that those are both telling us to understand what the message is within all the details. And here as well, that's what the Pasuk is getting at, that Shamati Bekol, so I listen to the sound, I listen to the voice, and that helped me appreciate what the mitzvah is actually asking, not only that which is spelled out, but the totality of its message. So because shamati b'kol, because I listened to the sound also, I listened to what the whole message is, so that's why I can say, asisi k'chol asher tzivisani. I can say that I accomplished the mitzvah in its totality. So then he goes on to say some other creative ideas. He says, so what is the real essence of the mitzvah of Maisrus, mitzvah of Maisr Ani and Maisr Levi? What exactly is the message? He says, not just about getting the produce from one person to the other, because the Kaddish Baruch Hu could take care of the Ani, could take care of the lady without you. Why is he specifically commanding you to take the produce to the Ani and to take it to the lady? He says, all of that is about connecting you with these people and connecting you with the spiritual qualities of this people, and Maaser Sheni also, which you have to go and eat in Yerushalayim, and it's going to be more than you can eat by yourself, and you're going to have to invite holy people to join with you. So the real essence of these mitzvot is all about bringing you together and connecting you with the spiritual qualities of the Levim and of the Aniim and of all the holy people that you will have together with your Maaser Sheni. So with all of that, so then he gets again, he talks about the whole Aliyah in this one drasha. He says the idea of Alo Shachachti and the notion that I didn't forget to make a bracha that we spoke about a few minutes ago. So here again, he quotes his father, the Avnei Nezer, as we said before, that the point is the bracha of Shechianu, and that the idea is that you have to have enthusiasm and excitement about the mitzvah. The Torah is conveying that as an integral part of the mitzvah experience, that is conveyed here with the Shechi of Daraisa, as he understood it, of Shechianu. But still, okay, so why isn't that included in Lo Avartim in Mitzvot Secha? Why do I then have to say V'lo Shachachti as a separate thing? There is another fascinating idea, that the notion of Shechianu as a mitzvah, so the idea that you should be excited to do a mitzvah, okay, so I can be excited to take a lulav, I can be excited to take an etrog, I can be excited to eat matzah, so I can be excited to do a mitzvah that's about me, but if the mitzvah is about helping somebody else, so then we got to be a little bit careful before being too excited, because it means that person is suffering in some way. That person has a chisaron, and oh, I'm so happy that you're suffering, so I can perform the mitzvah of giving you tzedakah. So there's a little bit of awkwardness there, a little bit of insensitivity in having too much excitement about that. But the question is, do you understand what it's really about? Did you go to the depths of the mitzvah and understand that it's not just that he's suffering and you need to stop him from suffering, but there's a positive value in connecting people together this way, in creating this mitzvah of Maaser Ani and the like, creating this obligation to bring people together? That's a milo, that's ultimately a positive, and appreciating that's what justifies the Shechianu. So he says that's also, when we talk about a Kaddish Baruch Hu's din, that's also ultimately what it's about. So sometimes a Kaddish Baruch Hu gives us challenges, and it seems very harsh, and it seems like it's an expression of negativity. But we understand that ultimately it's about a Kadosh Baruch Hu connecting to us more powerfully through the repair of this situation. And if we're able to appreciate that, so that's something that ultimately is good for us. That's ultimately simcha, and that's a part of the message here. So he says that's also pshat, to make it even more seasonal. So the pasuk says in Tehillim, Allah Elokim Betruah, Hashem Bekol Shofar. So the Medrash says about that Allah Elokim, that when a Kadosh Baruch Hu goes to the Kisei Hadin, he goes to the seat of judgment, so Elokim is a Midas Hadin, he starts with a Midas Hadin, he starts ready to judge us very harshly. But then when we blow the shofar, so then it changes to Rachamim, it changes to Rachmanis. So he explains that idea, that the shofar is what reflects our panemius, It's our vocal sounds before we're able to create any actual words, before we're able to edit it and process it. It's just the essence of our feelings. So that connection is where HaKadosh Baruch Hu relates to us, and the din turns to rachamim, and that turns everything around. And so too, he said that we're able to connect to this message of what the maestros are about and what that whole theme is. So then that's something that will bring about a Kaddish Baruch Hu's rachamim. And that's what Chazal is telling us on this pasuk, that Hashkafa is normally the ra, God looking at us is often something that can be negative, but because of our involvement in these matanos, it's able to turn to achmanas, it's able to flip around. That's this message here, that because we are able to appreciate what these matanos ultimately are about, so that also connects to the rachmanas of the Kaddish Baruch Hu, and that's the mitzvah of the kol shofar, and that is the message that's included within. That's a beautiful thought for Rosh Hashanah, and plug it into the whole season. So, like I said, there is quite a bit in these four psukim. There's more to say also. If you want, also, if you have access to the Sefer of Rosh Hashanah Hirsch, so he has a longer discussion on this pasuk about how essentially this is really the end of the mitzvot, that after this we just have Hakel and Ksiva Sefer Torah. And so this is pretty much one of the closing messages of the mitzvahs of the Torah, and how all the various themes of responsibility that come from the Maestros and the Maestro Ani and the Maestro Levi and the Maestro Sheni together represent all the different spheres of duty and commitment that the Jew has in this world, and therefore the Torah is essentially closing off the mitzvahs with this declaration that we appreciate all of these messages and we recognize what they mean for us. So all of this comes together as one of the closing themes of the instructions of the Torah. So a lot to think about. So we'll give you that to ponder as you welcome Shabbos. I wish you a wonderful Shabbos. You stay safe and healthy, and should have an uplifting weekend. We have a Labor Day weekend, but for us that means Ashrei Mi Shamal of the Torah. We still labor, we still have Shiurim, even if colleges, the cream of college classes aren't in session. So God willing, the Sunday schedule should be the same as this past Sunday, and our agenda, we want to talk about a very cheerful topic by its nature, as reason, Makdim Limits, let's talk about as reason. So that gets us squarely into Daf Dalet territory. So we're very eager, very zarez to embrace that sugya, and look forward to seeing you Sunday morning, when that will be our privilege. Yeah, you should have a wonderful Shabbos.